All right. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another great episode of the Sing Second podcast. I am John Schofield. Joining me is Chris Cervello from the great class of 1999 in Annapolis. The weather has sprung, Chris Cervello. It is 70 degrees today. So, you know, it is spring break and I am allowing myself some grace. I'm going to roll out to the Naval Academy golf course this afternoon to try to get out on the links. What is the plan for you today? Do we see you on the ocean course or the conservatory?
Tomorrow on the ocean course. Actually, this week down here is the tournament, the players tournament up in Ponte Vedra. So lots of people in the area. That's the big buzz here in, I guess you'd say North Florida. Is that where I live? North or Central Florida? I still haven't figured that part out.
North Central, it is. It is in the nexus of the universe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like in Seinfeld where downtown meets uptown and he's on the same street.
On the corner of First and First.
I am always in a golf pool where I try to pick the winner every week. I picked Max Homa for the players. I was almost going to go with Scheffler, but you know, like I don't want to use up chalk. You know, you can only use one of these golfers, you know, at one tournament. So I didn't want to use chalk at the players. What's your pick for
the Scheffler? I really like Scheffler. He played really well last week at Bay Hill. Switch putters to that mallet putter, which makes me look at the, I have a putter rack here in my office and I'm eyeing the Scotty Cameron mallet putter that I've had sitting here. So maybe I'll do the same thing and shoot a whopping 85 tomorrow instead of 89.
ladies and gentlemen, the class of 99 may as well be the class of 69. Chris Cervello is talking about putter racks and
that's very tough. You know,
what time shuffleboard is today. But in all seriousness, it is spring break. And it is as March is what it is, it's March Madness, which unfortunately will not involve either of the Navy basketball teams. The men lost in the Patriot League tournament, and the women, you know, Chris, we have to talk. When we did this as a sports podcast, we were huge fans of the hire of Tim Taylor with the women's team. Came in as a North Carolina assistant, took over during a very difficult time in the middle of COVID. Has a great recruiting class last year and loses like the top point guard in the first 10 minutes of the first game. And they end up winning one game. This year, Tim turned it around, a couple of new players, you know, the new freshman point guard, Zanae Barnett, I believe was just named the Patriot League Player of the Year on the women's side, or Rookie of the Year rather. And hats off to Tim Taylor. They made a run through the Patriot League tournament. They were up by 15 at Colgate. And I really thought they were going to sneak into the championship game of the Patriot League. It was not to be, but I'll tell you what, you know, this isn't a sports podcast again, but what Tim Taylor has done with that team, it's emblematic of what you teach at the Naval Academy, right?
Yeah. I mean, they definitely grind. And he teaches them to grind. And, you know, we've heard several times on the sports podcast. I even think Pels talked about it this year that, you know, Taylor has energized not only the student athletes that he has working with him, but he's also energized the alumni. So I hope that the leadership, you know, continues to give him some time to build that program. How great has women's basketball been throughout the NCAA? I mean, this has kind of been a down year for men's basketball across the NCAA. We're going to talk to Wojcik in a minute, but I've really enjoyed watching women's basketball writ large, and I think their tournament will be more exciting than the men's this year.
Easily one of the undertold stories of sports is what Caitlin Clark has done, not just at Iowa, but for sports. To overcome someone like Pistol Pete Maravich and the numbers that he put up, to just put up her own numbers independent of any sort of comparison or contrast, is fantastic. And it's really why you and I love sports. And as you mentioned, with it being March Madness, we are really excited to bring you two great interviews today. The first of which is with Doug Wojcik, who knows a little bit about March Madness. He was David Robinson's point guard, a member of the great class of 1987, and now the number one assistant for Tom Izzo at Michigan State. You want to talk about someone who knows basketball, knows Navy basketball, and can regale the days because he was a part of every single team that's gone to the NCAA tournament from when he was a player to when he was an assistant. During the magical Mike Heary days of the mid to late 90s. Doug Wojcik is a guy who knows a lot about the Naval Academy and knows a lot about basketball, and we're excited for him to be our next interview. And right after Doug Wojcik, it's a student segment. Friends of the pod, Christy and Matt Munley, are not just great supporters of the Naval Academy, graduates of the Naval Academy, employees of the Naval Academy, but they are parents of great Naval Academy students. That one student, Brendan Munley, a member of the baseball team and an athletic and scholarship programs foundation student, is also going to join us in our interview segment. So let's start with Doug Wojcik, ladies and gentlemen. Here's our interview with the Michigan State Assistant. It is now time for our alumni segment, and it's March, and the insatiable basketball fan in me couldn't help but cook in the books a little bit and getting what I think is going to be the best March Madness interview that we could possibly get together here from class of 87 grad, former point guard, former surface warfare officer, and now one of the top assistants on Tom Izzo's staff at Michigan State University. I'm talking about class of 87's Doug Wojcik. Doug, thank you so much for joining the pod. You graduate in 87, you do 5 years, as a surface warfare officer before you come back here. And you're an assistant before you really start your own head coaching career, first at Tulsa, then at College of Charleston. You've had stops with Mark Few at Gonzaga, stops at North Carolina, stops along the way. How did your experience at Navy, you were on very successful teams that went to NCAA tournament games, you have David Robinson in the front court. How did your experience at Navy prepare you for the crucible of parenting two kids who, by the way, went to Ivy League schools, so you're doing something right there. You're a successful college or Division I college basketball coach now on the staff of one of the best programs in the country. Do you think you would have been as prepared for this crucible had you not been a midshipman from 1983 to 1987?
Well, I'm very fortunate. A few things happened for me, right? Like, timing is everything. Certainly going to the Naval Academy and playing with a guy like David Robinson is right place, right time, right? A lot of success, got to start 3 straight years. None of that you can really predetermine. And prior to that, I was really well coached in high school. Skip Prosser was my high school coach. If you recall, he was the head coach of Wake Forest when he passed away. So that background with Coach Evans's background really kind of set me up to be a college coach. I wanted to be a college coach. I served in the Navy. And then the Navy was kind enough to me to bring me back after I got my qualifications at sea to the Naval Academy. And so I started my coaching career in Annapolis. And then I stayed on. They hired me as the full-time assistant. And quite honestly, as you look at the careers, I thought the Naval Academy was the best thing could ever happen to me because I got to recruit all over the country. And so instead of kind of being a regional type of assistant, I ended up having contacts, California, Texas, state of Washington, and it really helped my career, as far as just being able to go to different parts of the country and still know people. Because a lot of times you get pigeonholed into sort of being a regional guy. And so from that perspective, the other thing that really happened, I was very fortunate to be an NCAA tournament player. But then in the 90s, we won the Patriot League 3 times with Don DeVoe. Coach DeVoe hired me, gave me a ton of freedom, got to recruit all over the country, and then, of course, went to 3 NCAA tournaments. And when you win, just like any business, you get recognized. And I was very fortunate that I developed a relationship with Matt Doherty, who was an assistant at Kansas. Prior to that, he was the assistant at Davidson. And Davidson and Navy were recruiting a lot of the same kids. And one thing led to the next. I go to Notre Dame. As a Catholic kid growing up in Wheeling, West Virginia, Notre Dame was my dream school. So that was, very fortunate. Really, I look back at that, and my father was able to, go to Notre Dame and see me coach, and that was really cool. And then 1 year later, just Matt gets the North Carolina job. So I go on this run, right? I go from Navy to Notre Dame to North Carolina to Michigan State the first time, and then I became a head coach at Tulsa. So the Naval Academy has everything to do with what's happened to me in my adult life.
I'd like to touch on, because I just saw something pop up in my Instagram feed that showed the 1986 All-American teams, the first, second, and third team All-Americans. And my former camp counselor at Lenny Bias's camp, Len Bias, was on there. There was Roy Tarpley. There is a junior from Navy, David Robinson. They're just names that, really bring me back, to the John Stockton wearing the old Avia basketball shoes and, the pure times of basketball before NIL and the transfer portal and things that I want to talk about with you a little bit more in detail. But of those teams, of those experiences, I remember a Navy Maryland game, as a lifelong Maryland fan in the NCAA tournament. What are a couple of like the key memories for you as a player, from those amazing teams?
Well, so many of them, right? Because I think success brings, togetherness and memories, and we affected so many people without even knowing that that would happen. So certainly the climb, right? Our sophomore year, which would have been Vernon Butler's junior year, second class year, my third class year, just kind of that climb, right? Not. They were good the year before, won 24 games with Rob Romaine and Mike Jones, really successful. Couldn't get over the hump against Richmond. And then that next year, we were able to get over the hump against Richmond. So for me, I was just a non-scoring point guard that kind of ran the team. I was very fortunate. Of course, I was the guy that they needed to foul at the end of the game in our first game out down in Richmond. And a memory for me is I made three or four free throws down the stretch to beat Richmond finally. And then, of course, the 85 NCAA tournament where we go to Dayton, Ohio. And for me, Dayton, Ohio is just about 3 hours from my hometown of Wheeling, West Virginia. So Coach Prosser at that time was still a high school coach. So I had him there, and Dino Gaudio there, who was my high school assistant coach, my parents, friends, and we go and beat LSU. And then lose that game to Maryland and Lenny Bias. And then as the junior year, we had expectations. My second class year, Vernon's first class year. Obviously, the trip, we took a trip to Tokyo, Japan, played Army and Air Force, which was really an amazing trip. Playing a lot of big games, playing the Omni against Georgia Tech and Mark Price and those guys. And then, of course, the NCAA tournament, which was amazing. We're in the Carrier Dome, and we basically beat Syracuse on St. Patrick's Day weekend, and come back to the academy. The bus pulls into T Court, and all the mids are out there, and just a lot of great memories. And of course, my senior year, we ended up losing. So in the first round to Michigan. That's why appropriately I'm at Michigan State instead of Michigan. I've always kind of disliked Michigan, but anyway, it's just memory after memory after memory as a player. And then, of course, as an assistant coach, I'm very proud of those years in the 90s. I mean, we went to three NCAA tournaments, the same amount of tournaments we went to with David Robinson, and won the Patriot League, and played Utah and played Missouri, and we played North Carolina. So those are the three first round games that we played and lost, but a lot of memories with a lot of great players. Mike Carey, Son Booker, Brian Walker, keep in touch with those guys to this day. So the relationships really matter, and they really matter to this point in my life as well.
Well, you have unique relationships, Doug, and I love pulling the string on this. You and I have talked and known each other for a while, but our brand new superintendent, Vice Admiral Yvette Davids, I think was a plebe in your company when you were a second class. Your time here as an assistant coach, knowing how to recruit, knowing how to coach, being the last person on staff here when we went to the NCAA tournament. I think it was the second year, like 97. Mike Keary couldn't guard Vince Carter, and then in 98, Mike Keary couldn't guard Andre Miller. But like all joking aside, you still are very, very, you have involvement here. You are, one half of a dual grad marriage. You mentioned Lael, your wife was a 1990 grad, quite the little athlete. In her respect too. So how important are those connections still to you? Because you never leave your alma mater behind, right?
Yeah, especially not a place like the Naval Academy or the schools like Notre Dame or Vanderbilt or the Ivy Leagues. And in my kids' case, I've always wanted them to go to a place that you'd be proud to return to with your children and your family. And we certainly achieved that in Brown and Harvard. But it's I think as you age, life changes too, right? So I don't play the glory days thing all that often, but in terms of those glory relationships, Kyler Whittaker drove from Virginia this past weekend to be at the Purdue game. He's going to drive to see his daughter in Denver, and he's driving to Minneapolis and staying with me during the Big Ten tournament next week. Cliff Reese and I have always been very, very, very close. The guys I've affected or were affected by who are sports fans that went to all the games. A guy in '86, Dan Ballister, still very, very close with all those people. Today, you tell me before the Zoom that Louis Polar, who is the chief of naval operations for Peru, who's a classmate, and he was a company mate of mine. I mean, those kind of things really matter as you age, right? Like you're kind of through the professional side of your life to some degree. You're through the child rearing age of your kids. You've got a little more time to kind of put into these relationships that, as I look back, I mean, I've met a lot of people in my life, but those are the ones that are the special ones. And everyone has gone off to do wonderful things. Just a few weeks ago, Kyler Whittaker and then the basketball captain in 1984, Mike Jones, came and stayed with Leo and I and went to one of our games and just really enjoyed it. So it's nice to be in a profession too, where other people can kind of participate and enjoy, Kyler being at the Purdue game this past weekend. I mean, that's a great event to go to and enjoy. So to be able to allow or provide that service to your friends is very satisfying.
I want to get more into kind of basketball X's and O's because it isn't often that we have access to this kind of encyclopedic knowledge. But I want to talk about it more in terms of how you see the college basketball landscape changing. Here I am, I'm a lifelong Maryland fan. I'm a Villanova grad and thus a Villanova fan as well. But mostly I'm just a fan of college basketball and the purity of athletics. This is what this podcast was built upon, the idea that upon the fields of friendly strife are sown the seeds of victory, that you learn all of your finest lessons in athletics. But it seems that that athletic landscape, and this might just be us in our 50s now, Doug, getting to be crotchety old men, but with the transfer portal, with NIL, and with all of these things, I just see a different landscape, particularly when it comes to college football and everything that Nick Saban is doing, rightfully so, to raise the alarm about whether college football in the Power Five dynamic is truly scholar athletics anymore. And for me, I keep coming back to, conveniently, and as a little bit of a Naval Academy sycophant, I keep coming back to the sanctity and the purity of athletics at service academies, amidst all of this other crap, amidst the NIL, amidst all of these things, kids transferring to four different schools. It appears to me that your alma mater and service academies writ large have a unique opportunity here to kind of stamp their place as still a bastion of pure amateur athletics. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great point, John. I mean, it would certainly be my point of opportunity in the sense that there's a reason why, I mean, the kids did all the work, but our two boys ended up in the Ivy League. Again, going back to going to a place that you want to take your family back to, going to a place that your degree means something. And then the purity of college athletics, where you're going to go watch the women's lacrosse team, or you're going to go watch the women's tennis team, or you're going to go see the men's ice hockey team play, and have those relationships that I have, at 59 years old, relationships that matter. I do believe that it's really hard to kind of stereotype the whole situation, and maybe someday I'll tell you. Truly how I feel about all of that. But I think you do lose some of the commonality and the rivalry in games, for instance. For instance, we played Michigan this year. And boy, a Michigan State game, I mean, it's a big deal, right? And you looked at Michigan's roster, and none of those guys really kind of grew up in the rivalry. There were, I think, four starters that it was the first time they played in the game, right? So the regional, the kid that got recruited by Michigan and Michigan State, but chose Michigan State over Michigan, or chose Michigan over Michigan State, you kind of lose that. And I know, we can't, kind of appeal to the masses with this podcast. And really capture what it is doing, but it does become a little bit more transactional. And that's one thing that some people would say, Coach Izzo at times gets, he's a little old school and this and that, but his intentions are very, very proper and correct, and trying to preserve, the amateurism and the rivalries and the pageantry and education and why you play your sport and why you compete. And some of that has been lost.
Would you have been the successful SWO you were? Like, discount going into coaching afterwards. Granted, you came back here and you were a part of some great teams as an assistant. But would you have been, the successful naval officer that you were for 5 years, had it not been for an athletic background? Like, how critical, Slapshot Carter, when he was the superintendent here while I was the PAO, when people were talking about getting rid of plebe boxing, said something that really stuck with me, and that was, hey, if I'm going to be in the backseat of an aircraft, I want to know that the pilot, when something goes wrong, has the experience of getting punched in the face. And you don't get that anywhere else other than plebe boxing at the Naval Academy. And he used it as an example of why athletics is so important. For me, I have found that when I was in high school, it helped me organize my day more. I felt more driven. I felt more, I just felt like I had a place. And when I was off season, I was sort of off. For you, athletics still being a part of your life, would you have been as successful as you were had you not had the rigors of playing in a D1 program? Actually, whether you were playing D1 basketball or just playing field ball in intramurals?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I mean, I go back to I grew up in a more traditional time frame where you played all three traditional sports, football, basketball, and baseball, played them through high school. Now looking back, so glad I did and had those opportunities. I think football helped me as much as basketball as far as getting hit, knowing how to hit, take a hit. My wife and I have chosen to basically raise our children in an athletic environment. Through the highs and lows, and there's highs and lows in every profession, right? We look back and go, man, all those low points really turned out to be positives. And in my career, we've moved, and the moves have been all positive moves. And we look back and see our children, and they can kind of problem solve, they can socialize, they know how to compete, they know how to be good teammates, they know how to lose. They know how to win. So all of those things, I think, are wrapped up in sports in general, whether it's lacrosse, whether it's swimming, whether it's basketball, whether it's football, but just being on a team. And going back to your original question, I'm still on the Navy team. My teammates still matter. My senior chief from my deck division still texts me before and after games because he's home in Virginia Beach watching Michigan State. How cool is that?
Well, I'll tell you what, our senior enlisted are always looking after us SWOD division officers, that's for sure. Before I let you go, Doug, one question I do have to ask, and you don't have to reveal too many state secrets here, but I had the honor of spending 2 days with Coach Izzo back 11 years ago, I think now, when the Veterans Classic first came here. And just learned so much. I was astounded by how someone could combine like harshness and holding kids to a standard with pure cajoling and love, with pure strategic X's and O's discussion. Having now been a two-time assistant on that bench, what are some of the Izzo-isms that you've applied to your own portfolio? Because that portfolio, like I said before, has Paul Evans and Don DeVoe and Skip Prosser, like at the very beginning stages, Dino Gaudio coached at Army, Mark Few. Those are a lot, but now that you're kind of on the second ride with Tom Izzo, what do you take from him?
Well, I mean, he has a deep love for the military. One thing that we do here at Michigan State that's pretty amazing, almost brings tears in my eyes every game is we have a veteran out there for the national anthem. And man, let me tell you, it's the coolest thing. And in the Midwest, there's a huge appreciation for that. It's really just people are coming to games here, whether it's raining out, whether it's sleeting out, whether it's snowing out, they're coming to cheer on the Spartans. So that love for the military is one thing I appreciate from Coach, and he certainly appreciates my background that way. But certainly, one thing that I'd say that Coach does better than anyone else is he spends time. So, we've been through this as parents now. So I'm a coach and I'm a parent, and you really don't know what you're getting when you sign at a school. You really don't. And the one thing I would tell anybody who's looking to come to Michigan State is he is going to spend time with you. So when that discipline comes and when that tough love comes, he has spent that time in terms of understanding where he's coming from and what we're trying to accomplish. So accountability, time spent. I think any relationship that you want to have with anybody, whether it's you and your children, whether it's you and your wife, whether it's you and your workmates, the one thing that Tom Izzo does better than anyone else is he spends time. There's no phoniness. He's going to spend time with your parents. We're not going to be the type of place that recruits you, and then all of a sudden, all those phone calls go away once you get here. We're not on to the next guy. We want to be self-made. We want to promote from within, kind of along the lines of what the Navy is.
Yeah.
In that sense, maybe it's not for everybody, but we believe we're on the right side and more than we are on the wrong side here. And that's due to his character and his time that he puts in.
I could not agree more. And if I could throw no phoniness on a
Yeah.
bumper sticker and sell it, I absolutely would. It's in my opinion, one of the most important things, a part of this process. Well, we're up on time, Coach, but I'll give you the last word here. I know it's rarely going to happen that you're in the living room of a high school kid who's considering either Michigan State or the Naval Academy, but how would you balance that if you have a kid who is looking at your alma mater, a kid who is a potential high ceiling kid who could make it work at Michigan State? I know you have your current loyalties based on your employment. But how would you sell both of these institutions based on exactly what you just talked about with Tom Izzo, which I think is a huge selling point? But in your experience and past with the Naval Academy, how would you balance that delivery of information?
Well, I think that the thing about the Naval Academy is certainly you have to be a bigger picture person, right? You have to have a view of the world where you want to do some things that other people can't do or won't be able to do. And then, of course, you have to be patriotic, right? So you have to want to be a part of something bigger than yourself, right? At our level, coaching wise, so much of it is based on the high school rankings to some degree. Also with us, it's going to be regional, like who, getting back to that Michigan State rivalry, like who really values being at Michigan State, wants to be at Michigan State. And in today's world, we have to be even more probably more selective on who is the right person here based on the money that's out there the kids are able to make playing college basketball now. So two different dynamics, both really, really good. I love our separation point at the Naval Academy, and I love our separation point at Michigan State. It has a separation point. There is something to talk about, which is okay. If there's separation points, then it's easy to kind of split through or work your way through the clutter out there on who's right and who's wrong. And so, you know, recruiting is not a perfect science. It's just never going to be. The Naval Academy has always dealt with attrition. All right. Attrition at the Naval Academy has always been a part of the process there. Attrition at Michigan State has not always been a part of the process. Yeah. So now attrition at the highest level was there because of the transfer portal and then the money that's out there. But as long as you're willing to deal with attrition and you know what attrition is, I think it helps figure out who the right people are on the front end. And if you get the right people on the front end, they'll be here on the back end.
An incredibly wise perspective there. And personally, I thought that I watched like 30 minutes of SportsCenter without like Stephen A screaming at me. This was like my own classroom. And ladies and gentlemen, I kid you not, right before we went to tape here, we are touring around the chief of naval operations for the Peruvian Navy. And he is a 1987 grad of the Naval Academy, another feather in the cap of this great institution. And I am telling Vice Admiral Polar that, you know, I've got an interview at noon. It's ironically with one of his classmates. And he's like, who? I was like, oh, Doug Wojcik. He's a coach at Michigan State. And I couldn't even get Michigan State out without Vice Admiral Polar stopping everything. He's got like five different members of his staff. And he's like, no way. You tell him I said hello. So, you know, from foreign navies to college basketball, and the dad of two great kids, you know, Wyndham at Harvard and Paxson, you know, playing senior night after already playing at Brown, getting another shot at Notre Dame and Duke before the end of this ACC slate. It's just an incredible pleasure to have you on, Doug, and thank you for being the graduate that you are.
Thanks, John. I appreciate the time, and just amazing that today was the same day that Lewis was on campus. And as I told you, I took a Unitas cruise to Peru and 40 years ago. Again, getting back to why we love the institution, why we love what we did and where we went to school, it's those relationships, it's that family, it's my senior chief keeping in touch with me, it's Kyler Whitaker coming to the Purdue game. So I'm glad to be in the field. I'm glad to be potentially somebody that another grad could look up to and look for information if they ever wanted to get into coaching. It's worked out really well, and I appreciate the opportunity being on.
Yep, those connections are there, Coach. You can't really go too far without feeling the impact that you had back in the 80s, in the 90s, and still today. You know, just maintaining your posture as a graduate of character and consequence. We thank you, and we wish you the best of luck if you happen to play Maryland in the Big Ten final. You know, I think Maryland needs it more than Michigan State. I think they're going to have to win out to get to the tournament. So my 15-year-old isn't too despondent, but you know that I'll always root for Michigan State now, Coach.
Thanks, John. You take care and have a great day.
All right. You too. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Coach Doug Wojcik of Michigan State basketball. We're going to go to break. This is Sing Second.
The Sing Second podcast is brought to you by Stratus Core Technologies. StratusCore Technologies is a leading small business provider of information technology services to America's warfighters. Headquartered in Virginia Beach, Virginia, their 230-plus employees have been delivering premier quality services in software and network engineering, enterprise architecture, Afloat Installation and Maintenance, IT Operations Management and Cybersecurity for the U.S. Navy and Marine Corps since 2015. Team Stratus has a global footprint, with staff located all over the United States and 11 destinations around the world, including Singapore, Japan, Guam, Korea, Greece, and Germany. Stratus Core Technologies is the provider of choice when the nation's most difficult technological problems need the most enterprising solutions. The Sing Second podcast is very proud to have Stratus Core Technologies as one of our premier sponsors. Please check out Stratus Core Technologies online for your information technology services solutions.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. It is time for our student segment. I'll tell you what, I'm really happy with the way that we're bookending this podcast, talking to Navy point guard legend Doug Wojcik from the great class of 87 as part of our alumni segment. And now coming in our student segment is Midshipman Second Class Brendan Munley, a member of the baseball team, a local student, from DeMatha High School, but also one of our ANSP Foundation students. We're going to get to him about that here in a second, but also the son of a Naval Academy grad. His mom, Christy, was a 1992 graduate and still hangs out with some of those 1992 degenerates like David Lilliflorn. But without any further ado, Brendan Munley, student athlete, Naval Academy midshipman, foundation student, welcome to the pod. Introduce the listeners to who you are.
Oh, thanks for having me, Mr. Schofield. Brendan Munley, born and raised in Annapolis, Maryland. I attended DeMatha Catholic High School. And then afterwards, I took a foundation year at Salisbury School and made my way to the academy.
Let's talk about the foundation school, Brendan, because, you know, we do a lot of outreach here at the Alumni Association and Foundation with our athletic and scholarship program trustees. We try to do a lot of education out there about how the Naval Academy is actually funded and how it's run. So many people believe that, you know, the lights are on over there and the operations, you know, for 4,400 midshipmen is due solely to government funding, when really it's the philanthropy of athletic and scholarship program trustees, philanthropy of all alumni, that really help programs like foundation schools and athletic and scholarship programs. Walk us through how that opportunity was made available to you. You go to a very good high school here, in the local area, you go to DeMatha. You don't get into the academy, out of the gate. So you have to go to a foundation school or a prep school year. How did that prepare you?
So I think attending like DeMatha, like as rigorous the academics are there, they prepare me like very well for college. But of course, the academy, people always fall in the struggles, and admission sees how everyone's academic schedule lines up, and they just saw that maybe I was a step behind and needed like one more year. I was doing all right in high school, but maybe needed that one more year to really expose me to the level of classes and the type of teaching that is held at the academy. So at the foundation school, I'll go back to when they presented me this opportunity. I at first saw it like more so like an obligation, like this is something I have to do, but it's really like something that they offered me, and it was a privilege to attend Salisbury the year before and to go through that whole process and to change my mindset to more of a, like, this is a year where I'm focusing solely on myself to prepare myself for the next 4 years at the academy. And so arriving at Salisbury, I was maybe a little cynical about like being a fifth year high schooler or postgraduate there, but like getting to know the people there and talking with the teachers, like they're all in on preparing you for the next step of whatever your career academic life may be, and going through that whole process with them, classes with teachers, with mentors, was very, very helpful, pushing me towards the next step in my life coming to the academy.
And you're in that next step now. And again, you mentioned it. You're the son of a graduate. Not just any graduate. You know, if I can brag on your mom for a second, you used to work in admissions for years. Way back in the Chuck Larson days, was on the protocol staff for Admiral Larson. So, you know, you're not a dummy. And you go to a really good high school in DeMatha. But a lot of people believe that these foundation schools, Brendan, you know, are merely to make, like, you know, some linebacker who's really good, exceptionally good, or to build, you know, the more effective Navy football team or Navy basketball team, when really a lot of the benefactors of foundation schools are guys like yourself. You know, I mean, I think you would point the spotlight right on you. You are not one of the starters. You are not one of the MVPs of the baseball team. But I know for a fact that the athletic mission and the physical mission means a lot to you. You know, so how would you educate people about who these foundation school people are, like yourself? And again, you didn't go to Salisbury, like right down the road in Salisbury, Maryland. This is the Salisbury School, ladies and gentlemen, up in Connecticut, an elite, you know, secondary education opportunity. How would you further educate people on that, Brendan?
So I would say, like, myself, yes, I'm on the baseball team at the academy, but I was not recruited by the baseball program. I didn't go to foundation school to get an edge up and become more athletically prepared to come to the academy. I went to foundation school because my resume fit maybe 3/4 of the criteria, but they wanted me to get that extra year of preparation. So basically, I attended Salisbury just as a student, not as a committed to the academy. I wasn't like blue chipped for like an athletic position or an athletic spot on the team. So myself and I would say two other foundation school students who were on the path to go to the academy, we're all at Salisbury at the same time. And one of those was an athlete. One of those was a recruited crew member. But myself and the third were just there for school. We were just there attending school, getting a leg up on classes and whatnot. So Salisbury is basically a verified, approved by the academy, a boarding school. We attend the school with 4 years of high school students. And
that was tough for you. You do that during COVID, you know, you're the end of your high school career, and now the beginning of your college career, just like a lot of people, was affected by COVID. You know, but now you're fully matriculated in. In fact, it makes me feel old to call you midshipman second class Munley. Yeah, do you feel like you would have been as successful as you've been so far? Because I can tell you that, you know, from when I first saw you get into the DeMatha program to where I see you now, you know, the change in you is remarkable, if I can sound like someone other than like a proud uncle or godfather or something like that. But, you know, how has the Naval Academy now been for you? It's not easy for anyone, but for you, it seems like the challenges of it have been much more manageable after the Salisbury year.
Yes, I agree. I think going into the academy straight from DeMatha, straight from high school, would be pretty difficult, especially running into COVID, where you don't have that like face to face contact with your teachers. You don't have that like every day, like you get to see your teachers. I mean, I guess over Zoom, you could talk to them and schedule Zoom meetings, but it's not the same experience. I don't think that I had attending Salisbury. I think attending Salisbury and having that face-to-face conversation and preparations and personal development with my teachers, with my mentors there at Salisbury, showed me how to be a competent student at the Naval Academy.
And now that you're in the Naval Academy, you're obviously doing very well. You know, we've talked before about, you know, what you're on the track to, you know, to apply for in terms of service assignment. But, you know, if you're talking to other Broadneck students or other DeMatha students or other just local students that you come across all the time, having been a local, you know, a local kid, what's your sales pitch now on the Naval Academy? I know it wasn't what it was 4 years ago when this first started to, you know, to matriculate in your head. What's your sales pitch now?
I would say if attending the academy, attending any of the academies, but more specifically the Naval Academy in this area, it's very competitive. There are definitely going to be people out there who you think are going to be better candidates than you, or on paper they may have better numbers, better stature or whatnot, whatever you want to compare yourself in terms of academics. But I'd say if that's something that you really want to do, I would stick with it. And if you're presented with that opportunity to take an extra year or to take that extra year at a foundation school, I'd say take that chance on yourself. And you might not like it at first, but you settle in, you meet very good people along the way, very helpful people that I still talk to this day. You make the connections you make throughout the process, I think developed me into the person who I am and the person who found some success at the academy. I'd say if you're going up for applying for an academy, that just because you don't think that you will line up as well as other people will, doesn't mean that that's what they see also. And that I think you should stick with it if that's something that you really want to do.
Exactly. Everyone has something to give here. You know, some people it's a little bit more academic, some people it's a little bit more athletic, but it all comes together to use your mother's terminology from her admissions days, the whole person multiple. One of the whole person multiples of you is now as an athlete, and we can't ignore the fact that you're balancing, you know, the rigors of a Naval Academy education with being a D1 athlete. Maybe you weren't blue chipped, maybe you weren't recruited, but you know, now Brendan, you are playing, and it is spring break. So instead of having like the typical, hey, let's fly down to Cancun spring break, you, like most spring varsity athletes or all varsity athletes, are spending it here. You get, you know, the Fighting Hornets of Delaware State this week in that little bus ride up to scenic Dover. But then you start your Patriot League experience in earnest. You just came off of a really good series against Princeton, but you go up to Bucknell to finish out your spring break trip. Walk us through a little bit of how you evaluate this baseball team. You're coming through an enormous amount of change, going from a legend in Coach Costi to now a new coach in Coach Ristano. And you're in the early stages of the year. Give us your evaluation of Navy baseball thus far.
I think that thus far, of course, we went through programmatic changes, but we went through those changes with open arms and a clear mind on what was going on. I think this team wants to win, and that we're set out to win, that we're prepared. And these upcoming games during spring break, we don't have that little distraction come what's in the classroom. But without over spring break, I think the guys, the team as a whole, are set out to win games and find success at the end of the season.
I can hear your dad blowharding in the back, talking big about you know, trying to sell people on those Bucknell tickets for the football season. Or whatever other snake oil that he's selling. But, you know, all joking aside, you do hail from a family that has given back to the academy. You know, your dad working for years and years in the ticket office, your mother in the admissions office, and really you and your brothers and your sister always giving back. You know, that smell, that sniff, ladies and gentlemen, of nepotism in the ticket office is every single Saturday seeing a Munley in there shelling out tickets for the football games. What is being a part of the Naval Academy environment since you, you know, we're a baby. You know, I think the very first time I set eyes on you, you were still like toddling around, but the Naval Academy was part of who you are. How has it evolved for you, you know, from a family angle to now, you know, you're in it?
I think being around the academy with my parents, with the jobs that they have, has been everything to me. I think growing up with working game days at Navy football or with Navy football has exposed me to the people who I looked up to in my life, and now I find myself in that position now, being one of those people that I guess I would have looked up to when I was little. So I think being around the academy growing up has just introduced so many people to my life who I think have built me to who I am today. So for that, one of the reasons why I even came to the academy was because I wanted to give back, because I've seen what it has done to me growing up, and I wanted to stick with that and see what I could do if I attended the academy.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, he is the son of two great Naval Academy supporting parents. He is the brother to an Auburn student with amazing hair, one of the best gymnasts that I've ever seen come out of George Washington University, and the brother of Will Munley, who, congratulations to him, just started a new job on the equipment staff for NC State Athletics down in Raleigh. Brendan, we're so happy that you came on the pod. We're so proud to watch you develop from where you were as a wee lad, as a tyke, running around Broadneck, and now a midshipman second class, watching the tail end of your Naval Academy career arrive here. And I know that it will end with total success. I'll give you the last word, in one sentence or two, what makes the Naval Academy a special place? And then we'll let you go.
Definitely the people that you meet there, the people that you're introduced to, they make the place what it is today.
There you go, ladies and gentlemen. No better sales pitch than that. Brendan Munley, member of the baseball team, and really the best Munley of them all. Let's just go ahead and say that right here. We're going to go to break, ladies and gentlemen. What an amazing pod from Doug Wojcik to Brendan Munley. Now we're going to take this baby out. When we come back, stick with us. This is Sing Second.
The Sing Second podcast is sponsored by ProMD Health. ProMD Health is a state-of-the-art medical practice comprised of several locations, all specializing in non-surgical treatments and procedures to help patients look younger on the outside and feel younger on the inside. At ProMD Health, their unique personal approach to medicine, coupled with their cutting-edge anti-aging treatments, provide their patients with unsurpassed care in a relaxing setting. They cater to patients that require the best in personalized medical care. Please visit ProMDHealth.com, visit their office in Annapolis. Friend of the pod, Scott Melamed, has been the original sponsor of Sing Second, and we encourage you to visit the website for your non-surgical medical needs.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Before we take this out, I really want to thank Doug Wojcik for joining us in the midst of March Madness, in the midst of him getting ready for the Big Ten tournament. It just speaks volumes about a guy who I think has so much basketball acumen to add, and I really hope we see a lot more of him around the Naval Academy in the future. And of course, to Brendan Munley, I'm not going to thank him too much. He's on spring break and really wasn't doing anything anyway. But hey, Munley, thank you so much for being here. Chris, before we go out, I just want to remind our listeners that Shipmate Magazine, it should be hitting your mailboxes again here at the beginning of April. But as I'm going to do a lot here in the next couple of months, I want to remind everyone that if you don't like getting paper magazines, if you don't want to get Shipmate on paper anymore, you can always read every single issue of Shipmate online, and you can opt out of getting the paper copy of Shipmate by going to usna.com, logging in, and then going to the Shipmate page. We're going to make that page a lot more prominent here in the next couple of months. It'll give you the option of getting less paper in your mailbox, which I know a lot of people want to pursue. With that, Chris, I'm really excited, not only about the golf I'm going to play this afternoon, but about spring break and about what spring break offers. And that is when the mids return from Cancun or from their MAG community relations trips or whatever they're doing during spring break. They are truly on the downward slope. You are approaching the finish line. I think we talked about how you managed spring break and how you managed the dark ages from your perspective as a grad. But when you come back from spring break, that's when the excitement really starts, right?
Yeah. I mean, really, regardless of your class year, I mean, if you're a plebe, you're thinking about Herndon. If you're a third class or a second class, you're thinking about just getting to the next milestone, which is summer cruise. And obviously, if you're a firstie, you're thinking about commissioning week and the fleet. So the remainder of March, you know, I thought about this after we talked last week. Boy, that I think that's probably the toughest 2 weeks is those last 2 weeks in March. You mentioned at the top, the weather's starting to get nicer. The days are longer. You're starting to peek at the calendar a little bit, starting to make those plans. And then once you get into April, you're thinking about finals and all that. And obviously May, you're in the home stretch. But I feel for the mids these next 2 weeks. Good luck, ladies and gentlemen, as you navigate the rest of March.
A lot to navigate indeed. Spring break is kind of a quiet time, so not a whole lot on the calendar as we emerge from spring break. I do want to remind everyone that on the 22nd of March, we have our Distinguished Graduate Award Ceremony in Alumni Hall. I need to find out if we are live streaming this. I don't think we are, but we'll have videos and stories and all of the associated collateral to honor these four great gentlemen, Admiral Locklear, John Young, Jerry Miller, and Admiral Blair. This year's class of distinguished graduates, they are celebrated on the 22nd of March. And we will have an interview with one of those distinguished graduates next week. We had a great honor to sit down with Jerry Miller and talk to him. We have a Navy lacrosse alumni networking session happening here in and around the Navy lacrosse game on the 23rd of March. And then, as I've talked about before, Chris, we've got the regimental receptions going on here on the 25th and 26th of March. That, for you listeners, is when we bring in every single firstie, divided into regiments, obviously, or else we'd need a much bigger building. But we bring in every single firstie to the Flugel Alumni Center to introduce them to who the Alumni Association and Foundation is, what we can provide them, and everything, all of the resources that are available to them as they navigate the first months and years of their active duty service. Beyond that, I am excited to root for Navy baseball. Brendan Munley got me all excited about that, Chris. For you, what's on your calendar as we take this baby out?
Well, spring break starts here for our kids next week. So we're headed over to Sarasota. We're going to do an Orioles spring training game on Sunday and then spend a little time in Sarasota. So a little bit of a break for us next week. And then look forward to heading up to Baltimore at the end of the month. You and I will get to spend some time together and then we'll get to go to opening day. So I'm excited about the next 2 weeks in March. I do want to foot stomp, John, before we go out, the interview with Doug Wojcik. I'm not embarrassed to say, as an alumni, I hope we get to see Doug back on the bench in Alumni Hall. You know, there's a guy that is ready to be a head coach. He's ready to be a head coach at the Naval Academy when the time is right for the program. And I think we're inching towards that. I mean, not looking to push anybody out before they're ready, but I can't wait to have Doug Wojcik back in Alumni Hall.
There are coaches who get it, Chris. I'm going to cast aspersions just here for a minute and we can cut this out if we have buyer's remorse at the end. But you know, when I was the PAO here and we replaced Richie Mead with Rick Soule, you know, Coach Soule, for as good of a lacrosse mind as he was, he didn't get it here. He didn't understand the brigade. He didn't understand the Naval Academy. He didn't understand staff and faculty. And you have coaches who do not get it and traditionally do not get it and try not to be a part of what the brigade is and understanding the rigors of being a midshipman. There are coaches who do get it. Karen Gabera has been doing this forever, and I believe is the longest tenured coach at the Naval Academy. And I've got to do the research on this. She might be approaching being the longest tenured coach in the history of Naval Academy coaches. But, you know, I also believe that having a graduate as a coach means a lot, too. And we've seen that a ton with Louis Nicolau and the water polo program and the empathy and the understanding that you bring. And I agree with you. In my position, I'm not going to lobby for one thing or the other. But I do believe that Doug Wojcik is an incredibly good coach, an incredibly good graduate. And as a dual member, as a dual graduate family, I know that he and Lael, just as Yvette Davids and Keith Davids are going to be doing from Farragut House, would provide so much mentorship above and beyond the basketball court. So I echo you on that. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are out. If you're celebrating spring break, celebrate smart and wisely and safely. I myself am going to go out and try to break 80 today at the Naval Academy Golf Course, but only after I toil away here for the great alumni and your Alumni Association and Foundation. For Doug Wojcik and Brendan Munley and Chris Cervello, I am John Schofield. Thank you for listening to Sing Second. We'll see you next week. We are out.